Hello, this is Jean, who just joined the call. Hi, welcome to the call. This is How I Turn Motivational Interviewing Training into a Business. We will be starting in about 2 minutes. Hi, this is Jean Caton, and I will be interviewing Dr. Ellen Glovsky. We're going to be starting the call in about 1 minute, 2 minutes. We're going to wait. We have a large group signed up tonight, and I want to make sure everybody has time to get on the call so they can hear how I turned motivational interviewing training into a business. I will be interviewing Dr. Ellen Glovsky. Hi, we have about 2 more minutes before we get started, and this is the call tonight, How I Turned Motivational Interviewing Training into a Business, and I'm Jean Caton, and I will be interviewing Dr. Ellen Glovsky, who will be with us in just about 30 seconds. I just received a message from her, and she's dialing in as we speak. So, hi, Ellen. Are you here yet?
Yes, I am. Good evening. How's everyone?
Hi. Oh, we are the only ones that can speak right now.
Okay.
Everybody else is just listening. And towards the end of the call, we will get everybody that wants to ask a question unmuted, and then they can ask whatever question they may have remaining after we go through our planned conversation tonight. So I'm going to give people just 1 more minute to get on the line so they can get all of this information from us. And again, I welcome people who are still joining for How I Turned Motivational Interviewing Training into a Business. I'm Jean Caton, and I will be interviewing Dr. Ellen Glovsky. So I have turned off all those noisy chimes, so we have a lot of people here. They're just not all chiming in because then when people come and go during the call, it gets very distracting. So I always have that shut off. So let's get started. I'm going to briefly introduce myself because there's probably a lot of people on the line who I do not know and don't know me. Again, my name is Jean Caton. I am a business coach and a speaker. And my clients are both entrepreneurs and business women who are employed, and I teach them how to develop the business and marketing skills they need to have either a successful small business like Dr. Ellen has, or for those who are not self-employed, how to advance up to top jobs in their organization they work for. So either way, whether self-employed or working for an organization, I help clients have more personally fulfilling and financially rewarding careers. And that's who I am. My website is www.theprofitablewoman.com. Or please like me on my Facebook at that Profitable Woman as well. And tonight, you're in for a treat, because I know Dr. Ellen is the expert anybody interested in motivational interviewing will want to hear speak on that topic. And Dr. Ellen is both an RD, registered dietitian, and an experienced motivational interviewing trainer. Ellen is a member of the Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers. That acronym is MINT, M-I-N-T. And she's also a member of the International Organization of MI Trainers. And Dr. Ellen is on the faculty of Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts. So let's get into our call tonight. As I mentioned earlier, I have everybody on mute. So because whenever we get a large group signed up, it can get very noisy on the call. But you will be able to unmute yourself at the end to ask some questions. So stay tuned. We can hear you. I mean, you can hear us. We cannot hear you at this point. And that's the way we have it set up. So I'd like to get started if you're ready. Ellen, are you ready?
Yes, I certainly am.
Okay. I thought the best place to start might be there's probably a couple of people on the line who were interested in this intriguing topic, but maybe MI or motivational interviewing might be a new term for them. So I thought it might be a good place to begin to get us all grounded around your definition of MI or motivational interviewing. So would you give us just a short definition to begin with?
Sure. The two gentlemen who founded the motivational interviewing concepts are Miller and Rolnick. And according to their textbook, which was published in 2002 and is called Motivational Interviewing, MI is a directive, person-centered counseling style for increasing intrinsic motivation by helping clients explore and resolve ambivalence. That can be a mouthful, but put really simply, motivational interviewing is an approach to clients or patients to help them decide what they would like to do regarding proposed changes. So in motivational interviewing, we work with our client to help them clarify their own goals and values, so they can make decisions about what they would like to change as opposed to what we think they ought to do. That's the basics. There's certainly a lot more to be said.
Sure. Well, we'll get into a lot more of that as we go along, but that's what I really thought would be a good place to begin so we get a line. So what I hear in that, Ellen, is as a coach, there's a lot, you know, there's some things in common with coaching, and that is you called it person-centered or client-centered, and the client makes person makes a lot of decisions themselves, so we're not as the expert telling them what to do. So,
And people who are training to be coaches are very often taught motivational interviewing because there's a lot of overlap.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I think the reason, you know, whether it be either one or both, it's more asking and client-centered, which for me is part of the reason why I think it's much more beneficial than traditional old-fashioned kind of counseling. So why don't you tell me, you're the real expert. I mean, you're writing a book, you teach, you know, all those things we're going to get into today, but how did you first learn about motivational interviewing and get into this field?
Okay. I love to tell this story because it's one of the great discoveries of my life, of my professional life. In 1990, I was beginning my doctoral work, and I was thinking about my career, and which was already 20 years into being a registered dietitian, and I was noticing that I was taught tell people what to do. And I always felt like I was wagging my finger at them, like, this is what you're going to do. And no one ever did it. And when I really look back at my career, I found that I could count on one hand the number of people who actually did what I suggested they do or what I told them to do. And I found that I really needed to find a different way to behave, to be with my patients and my clients. The first course I took in my doctoral work was health behavior. And stages of change was a new concept at the time, and the idea that I could meet people where they are in their process of change felt revolutionary to me. I all the interventions that I had been taught, that I have been taught, are very top down, they're all action, they're all pointed towards the patient actually doing something. And the truth is that most people, when approached with changing something important in their lives, are ambivalent, and they're not at action yet. They're at the earlier stages. And the idea that if I behave differently with people, they might be more likely to move ahead through those stages towards action. I was so excited about that. I just felt like I felt like it changed my professional life, and it actually did, because I became a much more effective dietitian. A few years later, I heard about motivational interviewing at a conference, and I approached the speaker, Gary Rose, who has worked together with me for the past 15 years or so on this, and I asked him to teach me motivational interviewing. And Gary was a terrific mentor for me for many years. He taught me the basics and the finer points of motivational interviewing, and I discovered that not only am I less tired, but I'm much more effective. My patients are more likely to decide what they would like to do, and I'm not responsible for whether they do it or not. I feel so passionate and excited about motivational interviewing, and I feel incredibly lucky to have a chance to teach these concepts that I feel so strongly about, and to actually teach people something that I love.
Wow. Well, this is great stuff, and you said so many important things here. I'd like to tease some of that apart, and have you tell us a little bit more about some of those things you said, because it sounds, Ellen, like you were really a pioneer among the dietitians adopting motivational interviewing. Would you agree with that?
It's absolutely true. The Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers, MINT, includes only a few dietitians, and I'm one of only a subset of those who are actually out training other people in motivational interviewing. There are really only a few of us.
Wow. That's the first time I've heard you say that, and it is a little surprising to me, because I love what you said about, oh, I feel like I was wagging at my finger at people and telling them what to do. But I don't think, you certainly are not alone when you said the compliance was an issue. Clients just weren't taking the action.
Yep.
And you said because they were not at the action stage, in the stages of change. For everyone on the line, probably some know and some may not. Could you tell us a little bit more about that stages of change, the steps that people go through?
People go through predictable stages in the course of making any types of change in their lives, but the theory of the stages of change, the trans-theoretical model, was developed looking at helping people with substance abuse problems, and then it was moved to smoking, and now it's become a much larger theory that underpins lots of behavior change ideas in dealing with patients. The idea is that people go through these predictable stages in the course of change, and as a clinician or a behavior change agent, you can help people move ahead by helping them resolve their ambivalence. So the stages are pre-contemplation, in which people are not interested in changing at all, contemplation, in which people are considering it but they're not doing it, and they are ambivalent by definition in contemplation. And the next stage is preparation. So resolving ambivalence that people experience in the contemplation stage, they move to preparation, which is, I'm getting ready to do it. I'm not doing it just yet. I'm getting ready. The setting a quit date and smoking cessation is the classic preparation, and it actually comes from the theory of stages of change. Only after going through those first three stages are people actually in action.
Uh-huh.
And in 6 months of action is usually defined as maintenance, and then we're dealing with relapse prevention, helping people stay on track with the changes they have chosen. It's estimated that 80% of people who come to a variety of behavior change situations with a clinician, up to 80% of them aren't in action. They would like to be in action. They wish they were in action. They would like us to make them be in action, and actually we cannot. But they're actually in the earlier stages, which means they need help dealing with their ambivalence about change.
Wow. That is a really compelling statistic. About 80% of the people, so you're saying about 80% of the healthcare related people on the phone tonight are meeting clients in situations where they're looking, like you said, they want us to make them change, kind of like the magic bullet, or they're at some other stage where they're just not ready, and yet people try to force it upon them by saying, here's what you have to do.
And by trying to convince them. By trying to convince them that they ought to change. And this goes towards the ideas of motivational interviewing. When we try to convince people that they ought to do things by making good arguments, we actually set up increased resistance. And in motivational interviewing, we call that the writing reflex. That when I push you, you're likely to push back. It's just human nature.
Yeah.
So we don't fight with anybody in motivational interviewing. We're not in a wrestling match. We're not fighting.
So that's an interesting way to put it. You don't fight with people because I know I hate to be told what to do. And I hate, like, advice from the expert, like, you know, the husband, well, I don't have the husband to tell me, but, you know, the people say, well, the wife just wants to talk about her issues and the husband wants to tell her what to do or how to fix it. And, and people don't like to be told. I know that certainly from myself and from my coaching. But I have, that presents a question for me for people. I know there's a lot of other healthcare providers, not just dietitians or nutrition experts on the phone. But it's because I'm a dietitian originally, I'm going to ask it on behalf of dietitians. The doctor sends people in to talk to a patient, either in the hospital or the healthcare setting or in the outpatient setting, or they set up a follow-up appointment with the dietitian. And it must be kind of hard at first to get used to moving from the counseling mode to the MI mode, because wait a minute, I'm supposed to be telling you what to do about your diet so you don't get diabetes, or so you manage your blood sugar if you have it, or lower your cholesterol. So how do people make that leap by stepping back and moving them up through the stages? Let's say that the person's only there because their husband made them go, or their wife made them go, or the doctor told them to go.
Yeah. Usually the doctor.
Yeah, so how do you make that adjustment in your mind to get comfortable with, instead of tell, work through the steps?
That happens in training, in motivational interviewing training, which is what I am doing for my business.
Okay.
People learn. It's lots of practice, lots of viewing of video clips about how to do it, how not to do it. And we encourage people to practice not only in the trainings but on their own. There are some self-led workbooks and other materials I can recommend to help people guide themselves through learning how to be comfortable letting go of the idea that you could make someone do something. You know, if you only could understand how important I think this is for you, you would do it. That's the argument?
Yep.
But that's not the reason people are not changing. The reason people are not changing is because the proposed changes don't fit with their life. They don't fit in their lifestyle. They're too difficult. And we assume, using motivational interviewing, that our patients are the experts in their own lives. And it's our job to help them find their best solutions, not the ones we think they ought to do, but their best solutions that fit with their lives. Not only fit with their lives, but fit with their values and their goals in life.
Yeah, you know, that's such an important point, because I think so many times clinicians in general or other people helping professionals, they want so much to help. They think that this is a good way to help by convincing, as you use that term. And I know as a coach, the best way I can get someone, you know, to hire me, who wants to work with me, and of course it's all by choice in my case. But what really helps is when the client prospect thinks, wow, Jean really gets me.
Yes.
You know, and when we jump right into telling people what to do in the old counseling way, I could imagine most people don't feel like, wait a minute, you don't even get me. You have no idea what's going on inside of me and in my life. Motivational interviewing too?
Motivational interviewing, we call that accurate empathy. And accurate empathy means just what you described. Accurate empathy means I get you. I get how this idea of change fits into your life or not. I might not agree with you, but that has nothing to do with it. I understand what this means to you in your life. And when I'm training, I always say, you know, we all want to be seen and heard for exactly who we are at the very moment. And to the extent that you can let your patient or your client know that you get them, really get it, and you're not judging them, people are much more likely to want to change.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very important point in motivational interviewing, this idea of accurate empathy. It's one of the spirit points. We talk about the spirit of motivational interviewing, which really refers to how you hold your relationship with the person, with the other person, with the patient or the client. It's how you see yourself, and in this case, you see yourself as a collaborator and not a top-down somebody who's going to tell you what to do, but somebody who gets you in the sense of that accurate empathy.
Wow. Well, you know, we're going to talk about business and building a business around MI, but I'm just loving personally. I had a thimble full of knowledge on motivational interviewing when we get started, and I'm loving learning more. And everything that I'm when I compare it like to coaching or I say other things, you got a name and a label for it. So that really is a way that really helps me learn is, you know, we say, oh, what I'm doing now is accurate empathy. That's great. So let's move in. You've mentioned several times, you know, how you help people, you train people, what they have to do. Let's talk a little bit more about the training aspect, because I know you go to corporations and talk to people about this process. You're writing a book. You run your own workshops. You counsel clients using this technique. And I don't know, I probably don't have it all, but those are fewer things to do, Helen. I know that. I might think, well, boy, after this hour teleclass, I get and understand motivational interviewing. And I know that would be a mistake because this is a little bit more complicated to, A, even use with clients, but certainly to get to your level of expertise where you can teach it and offer workshops. So would you talk to us a little bit more about the training from the beginner to the sort of moderate to expert level, what that takes?
Yep, I'd be happy to. It's lots of training and practice, and in my experience, time. It's hard to learn MI if you try to cram it in. If you feel like, I have to get this, I'm going to go to a whole bunch of trainings and then I'll have it. It takes time for the ideas to settle.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I went about it, which I found exceptionally helpful, was to go to a lot of different trainings by different leaders, different teacher trainers. Each of us who have been trained to teach MI has a slightly different way, or a very different way in some cases, of presenting this. And I found it very helpful to go to several different trainings with different people. So I went around the country and talked to and sat in on and participated in other people's workshops to start to really get a sense of what motivational interviewing is as a clinician. So it starts with learning motivational interviewing as a clinician or as a counselor, however you'd like to think about it. And it's clear from the research literature on motivational interviewing that it takes 3 full days of in-person training to achieve beginner-level competence using MI as a clinician. And they measure this by a research instrument that's been validated and is used in most places where motivational interviewing is used in a research setting. It's a rating system of rating the clinician's behavior with the patient. And in order to achieve minimum competence using that rating system, it takes 3 full days. We recommend that that include lots of coaching and private tutorials, and it works best if you have one individual mentor to go back to work all this out. And as I mentioned, Gary Rose was that mentor for me for many years. Once we have been to several trainings, maybe even several with the same person, then you can go about learning how to teach motivational interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
So is that where you were going?
Yes, it is, because it sounds to me like you learn from the best, and then you sort of pull together, you know, the best of the best, and, you know, really mastered it yourself.
That's right.
So 3 full days to just use it as a clinician, and I know that may sound like a lot to some people, but I know, and I can, you know, keep drawing the analogies like to coaching. There were all different kinds of coaching programs, wellness coaching and on up. And I know I have, somewhere well in excess of 200 hours of coach training, and other people have a much, much less amount. So it depends on the level of expertise you want. So when I'm going to ask you tell us more about earning an income and using this in business, I guess there's a couple of ways you could benefit from becoming an MI expert. You could either bring it into your counseling and just have that as your, like, what makes you the best of the best nutrition counselor in the area or whatever expertise you have, or you'd have to take much more training to get to the level of teaching it to other people. I think that's what I'm hearing you say.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. And the best way to learn how to teach it to other people is through the Train New Trainers workshop that the Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers offers.
Okay.
And in order to enroll in that 3-day training, you must demonstrate proficiency as a clinician. And the way you demonstrate that is to send in a 30-minute tape of yourself with a patient demonstrating your best MI skills. And the people in Mint who organize these trainings review them, and either you're at the level where you're ready to learn how to teach it or you're not. So not everybody who applies gets accepted to these trainings.
And they might need to go back and polish their skills.
You have to have MI down as a clinician, because the training with Mint is here's how to teach it. And
mm-hmm.
it's a different set of skills. It's really interesting how I've learned over the 6 years that I've been running workshops and trainings that it's really a different skill.
Okay.
And yet, while I'm offering workshops and tutorials and coaching and all the different things that I do, I'm learning more about my own MI skills with my patients.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinating to be a teacher teaching this stuff, because I'm learning something every time I run a workshop. Every time I give a lecture, I learn something different about the nuance of motivational interviewing. That's really why I love my business,
mm-hmm.
because there are opportunities to learn something new every time I teach this.
Yeah.
And I find that thrilling personally. I think getting a chance to learn something while you work is a real privilege.
Yeah, and especially something that you're so passionate about. And I can see clearly this is not something where you just go out and buy the book.
No.
Yeah.
No. No. And, you know, sometimes at some a couple of conferences this spring. I'm offering intermediate or advanced workshops.
Yep.
And the people at the conference get to self-select which of the, you know, beginning, intermediate, or advanced workshop they want to go to. And
okay.
It's fascinating to me how what makes people think they're at the advanced level. You know, they think they've been to one or two trainings, and therefore they're at advanced.
Yeah, and they probably don't have any idea of, like you say, some of the real nuances and the things that go way to the deeper level.
Yes, that's right. That's
yeah.
right.
Interesting.
And as you learn more about it, you realize what there is left to learn, which is why it's such an interesting thing to be involved with, because there's always the next new thing.
Yep, yep. And you know, it's very powerful because it is, you know, I'm always helping people with ideas and building their business and things like that. And I'm just thinking, and I know we're going to talk about how people can learn more about what you do, you know, before the call is over. But I'm just thinking what a great tool this is, because how it would really broaden your career potential, because you could do this for nutrition counseling. You could do this for smoking cessation. You can use this skill of
yep.
motivational interviewing in so many different applications.
There are a long list of applications that MI has been used for, and it's all evidence-based, by the way. I don't think I've said that, and it's a really important point. There is a vast literature now on the effectiveness of motivational interviewing versus traditional approaches. So it's smoking cessation, it's diet, it's adherence to medication, it's renal disease and heart disease and cardiac rehab settings, and criminal justice is using it now, different types of counseling for any type of behavior change, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's been very widely disseminated at this point.
Wow. I could see where that would apply to so many different ways, because anything to do with the healthcare industry, I mean, we all know how bad compliance is, and, wow, you could be a patient medication compliance advisor
yes.
or something.
It,
wow.
Pharmacists are using it a lot.
Mm.
It's really very, very interesting. Pharmacists are the upcoming counselors in medication compliance
uh-huh.
because physicians are finding that they're just not effective at getting people to take their medicine. And
mm-hmm.
so pharmacists are being trained to do more of this kind of counseling.
Yeah. It's certainly needed, that's for sure, from what I hear and read. So, all right, well, let's transition a little bit into the business side of this work that you do, and I know you earn an income and have your business has grown really nice in the past year or so. You've been, you know, doing a lot of great things. So you have income from a lot of different sources based on motivational interviewing. So tell us a little bit about the business side of turning your expertise at the super duper master level in motivational interviewing and turning it into your own business.
Yep. Well, it began with offering workshops for a variety of agencies and companies and going around doing lectures at conferences. I do a lot of speaking and a lot of workshops. And what I'm finding now over the past year is that a lot of the agencies that have hired me to come do an initial training are inviting me back to do follow-up training to help people improve their skills, because it's becoming clear to them that a one-time doesn't get much. And actually, the research shows that people lose the initial skill over time after one training, that
mm-hmm.
they gradually go back to the other ways of doing things. So the follow-up training is really important, and I've been talking with lots of my clients, my corporate and agency clients who've hired me to do intro trainings, about the importance of follow-up. And so there's the initial training, there's the follow-up, and then after that, I offer a package for either small groups or individuals who are looking to improve their skills beyond that. And what that consists of is submitting to me an audio tape of yourself with 20 minutes or so with a client, and I use the research instrument that I mentioned earlier to rate what I'm hearing. And by the way, always looking at what you've done right, which is the model of how we behave with our clients. We always look for what people have done right.
Oh, I love that.
It's wonderful.
Do more of what you do right, then there won't be room for what you did wrong.
Absolutely. But I can help you. I can support you by pointing out what you did right instead of only what you didn't do right. And in the what you didn't do right category, we call them missed opportunities. We don't call them wrong or bad. And the model there is don't tell your clients what they're doing is wrong or bad. Use other language. The words you use make a big difference. So we look at missed opportunities. So I will listen to the tape. I will rate it. I would give either the individual or the small group written feedback and then telephone or Skype feedback in person about what I found and talking with people about how they might have done things differently. The research literature shows that that's the best way to move your skills ahead, is to have that individual coaching, and we call them tutorials, really help people move their skills ahead. It's hard to do. You know, if you think about someone listening in on one of your sessions with a patient, it feels a little uneasy, like what are they thinking about me and what do I really sound like?
Yeah, that sounds scary, but it's a good way to get better. Yeah.
It moves things ahead, and I need to say one more time, there's never a time where I would say, you did that wrong. Listen to what you said there, that's wrong. I would say, let's talk about how you said that right there in that sentence. How could you have said that differently? What would have moved this client ahead towards change? How could that have been? And talk about brainstorming solutions rather than just talking about what's wrong.
So you make in your training, when you train individual clinicians on MI, which is one of your income streams, you, as you use the term model, you model the safe environment with them, helping them learn, just like they would want to model a safe environment with their people who are not at a stage ready to change. And you're just bringing them along up the ladder of change.
And the way I behave with people I'm teaching and training is modeling the behavior that I'm trying to teach them. And it turns out that one of the most important aspects of training is the trainer, because I'm modeling the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that turns out to be part of the most powerful part of teaching, training. Tutorials, whatever you want to call them. And there are a few other things that I do. You mentioned my income stream. I have a training DVD that I've put together that is an introduction to motivational interviewing, and I sell that on my website. And the consultation, I do consultation to corporations. I've actually been working with some companies in the pharmaceutical industry who are very eager for patients to take their pills on time and as prescribed. And they have had me reviewing their scripts that the salespeople use and that the health coaches that they have by phone use to make them MI compliant.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really, really interesting. It's not so much training as it is looking at their written materials and helping them write it differently, so it doesn't sound so paternalistic top-down.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting.
So you really have followed the guidelines for small business owners, which is typically called multiple streams of income, which means you make money from working with these corporations and consulting to the corporations. You run your own workshops and do the teaching and training. You train clinicians. Then you work with end-user patients, I know, so you kind of keep your hand in with enjoying helping clients and patients. So you have income coming in from all those different ways, plus your product, which you gave us an example of CD, and I know we're going to talk more about that before we wrap up. So that's great. So you have literally made a business out of being in the business of MI, and some people on the line may aspire to that level, or maybe a lot of them just want to aspire to the level of being a competent MI clinician. And I'm going to ask you in a minute if you would tell us how they could get more of you, if that's something that you want. So we'll get to that in just about a minute. So before we do, I have another question for you, which wraps up some of the things that we've been saying so far. And this, I'm excited about what I've heard you say, and I bet that I'm not the only one on the line that sounds, wow, this is really cool. I want to do this, too, because I know there's a lot of people out there that are interested in having their own business and interested in something that, you know, helps their clients get better results, but let's start with the business side. From the business side, do you have two or three points you'd like to recommend people consider before they jump in to starting a business with MI as their core expertise? Any thoughts on that?
Certainly. My experience is that you need to be a very, very good at it as a clinician to start with, and you need to have taken the steps that I described to become a very competent clinician in motivational interviewing. And by competent, I mean that it has to be second nature, and this is my experience. If I am stuck thinking about, ooh, what do I say next? What does MI think I, well, how do I say this now? It has to be intuitive. It has to have become part of your style of who you are. And when you know automatically what to say next, and you're less and less tempted to tell the other person what to do, you can tell that your skills are moving along. I usually recommend that people develop what I call a third ear, so they can really hear what they're saying from outside. And if you hear yourself telling the other person what to do or telling them they're wrong or using the words bad and good, you know, those black and white terms, you can stop yourself, or I think you should. Stop yourself. Back up. You can say, you know what, I'd like to start that sentence over if you don't mind. I don't know what you should do. Would you mind if I start that sentence over? And people usually smile and say, of course. Mm-hmm. And you rephrase it by way of making it a suggestion. So when it becomes so automatic that you can actually stop yourself in the middle of a sentence, then it's become part of who you are as a personality from your inside, from your core. Once you have that and you're really comfortable with MI, then there's an opportunity to learn how to teach it to other people.
Okay.
So I really encourage people not to try to jump in to being a trainer right away. It's a process.
Okay. So let's talk about what you're saying is where just about everybody would begin, whether they would want to go on to do more like what you're doing or not. Everybody would begin by bringing it into their current practice, pharmacist, nurse, dietitian, or whatever. And if the people that are listening on the line have, say, well, I'm going to train motivational interviewing and use it in my practice, and that's really my main goal for learning about it. I want to do that because I want to get better. I want my clients to get better results, period. That's what I want. Is there a way when you were doing, you know, most of your work with clients, is there any way that, you know, how you get them their results, they really get the results, you know? Is there anything that you did in your business that you were using motivational interviewing, or did you just plain do it and get better results for the clients, help the clients get better results, I should say?
It's really the latter. It's really helping patients get better results. And you know what? See, helping patients feel more confident and competent that they are running their own lives well. As a dietitian, I have to say one of the things I think we do harm sometimes is by trying to get people to make changes that they're not ready to make.
Yeah. Okay.
And what you get is someone who feels guilty and bad about themselves, and that's a great reason to overeat. And so I think when we press people to make changes that are not appropriate for them, no matter how important they are, when we press people to change, we leave them feeling guilty if they can't do it. And I think that people ought to leave every conversation with a healthcare provider feeling competent and confident that they've made the right decision for themselves.
I love that because, you know, that's an interesting perspective. I feel like a failure after I talk to the dietitian or the dentist if I didn't floss my teeth, or the pharmacist if I didn't take my medication, or that's great. And I'm curious, and of course everything I'm curious about, you know, Ellen, so but I'm curious. I think for me, and this is just a personal comment, I think for me, I'd be more interested in coming back for my next appointment with you, whether it's on the phone or face-to-face or whatever, if you made me feel that way.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Because who doesn't want to be seen and heard for exactly who they are and be seen as a capable, competent grown-up?
Yeah.
And everyone wants to be walk in the world feeling that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you leave people feeling beaten up by what they've done wrong, they're not likely to do it right. They're likely to do it. They're less likely to do it right.
Yeah. I give up. I ate a cookie, so I might as well eat the whole batch of cookies.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I might as well just blow the diet. I'll do it next Monday.
And don't think I'm going to go back to see that person.
Why would you want to? Really?
Yeah.
It just feels awful.
Wow. That is great. I'm falling in love with MI. I guess he is. I know you have some things to give to people that are on the call that you're going to offer to these people, which I think is great. What I want to do is, I know in the flyer you sent out, you said you're going to have a CD for one lucky person. So tell me, how is that lucky person going to know who they are and that they got the CD, the free one, that they don't have to buy?
Well, within the next 2 days, I will send out an email to everyone who registered telling them who won.
Mm-hmm.
I will contact the lucky winner myself and let them know that this DVD is on its way. And I also would like to, there's two more things I'd like to say. I would like to tell everyone that I am offering an in-person workshop at Northeastern University in Boston on May 11th, a one-day workshop, and you can register and pay for that at my website, which is trainingwithdrellen.com, and doctor is with a D-R, so it's trainingwithdrellen.com, and you can register for that workshop. And for dietitians, that includes six CEUs, that you can, if in your professional development portfolio plan, you have indicated one of the codes that this meets, one of the learning codes for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, which is the formerly the ADA, you can claim the CEUs on your own. And if anybody's interested in that, I can help you with learning how to do that.
So get on a plane, get on a train, get on a bus, and get to Boston, and go to Ellen's workshop. Great.
Yeah, we'd love to have you.
Yeah, so one person's going to win the CD, but everybody can buy the CD, and you said it was how much again, Ellen?
$35 on my website.
$35, which is a fabulous deal, which really gives them a deep dive on what we talked about tonight in this one-shot teleclass. Then people can go to your workshop if they're in any way commutable to the Boston area. And I know that you also mentioned that you would offer, special for tonight's call, that you were going to give like five people a free one-on-one private consult with
yes.
you to talk
yes.
more. One-on-one
yes.
about their questions on motivational interviewing?
And help them assess their training needs.
Great.
Yes.
Okay,
yes, I would be happy to do that.
So get to your computer and go fast, because I'm sure those five slots will go very quickly.
Yes, people should...
What do they do to get one of those slots, Ellen?
Email me, please. Email me and let me know that you're interested in this complimentary consultation, and during which I will help you assess where you are in your MI training, or if you're at the beginning, and help you figure out what the best way is for you to proceed to learn it.
Oh, and maybe answer any questions they might have to decide
Certainly.
Even if they want to learn more.
Certainly.
Okay, so why don't you give us your email one more time?
It's Ellen@trainingwithdrellen.com.
Okay, so Ellen@trainingwithdrellen.com, and the message line simply needs to be, I want a complimentary consultation with Dr.
Very
Ellen.
Good.
And then you'll
yep.
set that
Very
up
good.
With them.
Yep.
You'll set that up with them. So lots of ways to learn more, because, phew, this nearly an hour has gone by already, and I want to save a little bit of time for questions. Is there anything else you would like to say before we open the lines for questions?
I think I'm all set. There's one thing I want to say. Jean is my business coach and has been for the past year, and I really have to put in a plug for Jean's work. She really has been a wonderful support and guide for me in developing this business, and I really need to thank you publicly, Jean.
Well,
you've really been terrific.
Well, that's so great, Ellen, because I'm excited we got to do this teleclass together, and I got to interview you, and I thank you so much for spreading the word, because, like yourself, I love very much what I do, which is helping people learn to build and grow their business, or do teleclasses like this, or speak live on the stage, or all sorts of other things to help people advance in their careers. So I really appreciate that surprise of a little bit of plug that I have there. Thank you. So this is how you get to ask a question. We're on what's called the Q&A mode, and that means if you press *6, you know, the star, I hope you have a lot of people from Boston, Ellen, that can still hear me. Even though I've been in St. Louis and Chicago and everywhere else for the last 30 years, I still have a little Boston accent. But
you're star six.
Press star six. That will unmute you. And then you can ask Ellen the question that you might have. So I'll let some people think about their question and press *6, and then if you start talking and ask your question and we hear you, then you'll know you're unmuted. And if we ignore you and don't hear you, then you'll know we
you're not unmuted.
Yeah, you're not unmuted. So is there anybody on the line that would like to ask Dr. Ellen a question? star 6. Let me see if I can unmute everybody at one time. Hang on, and maybe that might be easier.
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
I heard somebody's voice.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Ashita Vichapregada.
Okay, now everybody can be heard. So I will try to facilitate people asking the question. Say your name and then ask Dr. Ellen a question.
Hi, Ellen. I'm Ashita.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a student of Gary Rose from Northeastern University.
Yes.
I would like to know, actually, I'm not a consultant right now, but do you think that this training helps me for my future consulting process?
For your future consulting, did you say?
Yeah.
What is your business?
Actually, I am not in a business right now. I just passed out of my college.
Okay.
You thought of what?
Okay. Now, excuse me. Let me interrupt for a minute. Now that we're off mute, the person that has the baby crying, maybe you could press star 6 and put yourself back onto mute. Okay. And so go ahead.
Hi. I think it depends on what business, what consulting business you'd like to be in, what your field is.
I did my master's in applied nutrition, so I'm planning for a nutrition consulting.
Okay.
Do you think this training will help me for my future consulting process?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. If there's any area in your work where you expect to be trying to foster behavior change, then and motivational interviewing would definitely help you.
Yeah, because in my curriculum, I have a 4 credit hours of motivational interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a little knowledge about that, and I did my specialization in eating disorders.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, so I feel that definitely behavior change is important for my clients.
Yep.
So I would like to attend a workshop on May 11th. So do you think this workshop will help me?
Yes, I do. I definitely think it's an important skill for you to have. Yes.
Email you, Ellen, to get the details on the workshop?
Yes, please do that. That would be great.
So Ellen,
sure.
Training
Thank
with DrEllen.com, and
yes.
You'll send her. Okay. Right. Okay. I'm still hearing the little dial. So I don't want to have to put this all back on mute, but if you're in the noisy place. Okay. Question. Next question. Is there one more question? Everybody.
My name is Anna, and I am a dietitian and actually specialize in home disease.
I can't hear you very well. You're a dietitian where?
I'm going to have to put this back on you. Ellen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to put this back on mute because it's very, very, very noisy in the background. So hang on a minute. Okay, I put it back on Q&A mode, and the person that was just asking a question, if you would press the star key and then the number 6, that should unmute you, and then we will be able to hear you. You want to try that?
Thank you so much. My name is Anna, and I'm a dietitian, and actually I only work with eating disorder clients, and I am hugely interested in expanding my skill set on motivational interviewing and in kind of briefly seeing you and Molly Kellogg. I will not pretend for a moment to be even a tiniest bit proficient.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, with regard to my clientele, because I actually think that my patient group is one that this skill set would be, I don't even know. Maybe you can tell me if this is a skill set that could be very tailored for eating disorder specifically, and maybe a little bit of feedback as to, like, and I guess asking you how you've done that is the wrong question, but really your thoughts on application with this population.
You're asking me how does motivational interviewing apply to treating eating disorders? Is that what you mean?
Well, no, and I completely understand that it absolutely does, but I think I'm interested in just a little bit of feedback because I don't think anyone is going to argue with the fact that, like, somebody who has not eaten in a long time actually really needs to eat.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of a fine line to draw, I would imagine.
I'm not sure what your question is. You know what? I'm thinking that you and I should really have a private conversation.
I'm thinking that would be fantastic.
I would love to talk to you. Did you say your name was Anne?
My name's Anna, and I'm actually
Anna.
In Boston. And I will be at your training at Northeastern. And
great.
Yes. Okay. So I think that actually would make perfect sense.
Okay. So drop me an email. Drop me an email, and we can talk.
That sounds perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks so much. And we have time for one more question. And just press the star key and the number 6 and ask Dr. Ellen your question. Anybody else have a question? Okay. Well, let's repeat the URLs that everybody needs to have. That's training with www.trainingwithdrellen.com.
Yes.
And you can reach me at jeancaton.net/blog, and that's where I post a lot of things like this that you'd be interested in, other free teleclasses and so forth. So, boy, thank you so much, Ellen. I'm sure that people learned much more than they ever dreamed that they would on this, and there's so many more resources that you're going to offer them, and just wait till this book comes out sometime in the future. So you've got some great things going.
December is my hope.
Say it again?
December is my hope for the book.
December. Okay, so they have to act now and buy later.
Yes, very good.
Okay, well, get your CD, and one lucky winner will know who that is, and everybody else should probably buy one. So good evening, everyone, and thanks again, Ellen.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for being here.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.